Podcast. Welcome to another episode of The Pulse. I always tell you that we're talking to people who are doing big things, who have crazy careers. Love to talk to them. But there are a few that you talk to them and you go, wow, I'm actually getting a chance to sit down and talk to them. I told you I felt that way when we talked to New Edition. I feel that way talking to one of the greatest lyricists of all time. No matter who you talk to in hip hop circles, Big Daddy Kane is one of those people who they say, one of the greatest, and I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule, sir.
No, man, glad to be here. Glad to be a part of this.
Man, it's amazing when you sit back and you're preparing to do interviews. I'm sitting back telling stories about how your lyrics and the things that you did. Like my high school basketball team used to break our huddle with no half-stepping. It was that kind of impact. And sitting back looking at it, in your wildest imagination, did you think you would have that kind of impact on people's lives?
Well, that's definitely what I was striving for.
Okay.
You know, as you grow up as a fan of other musicians and artists, you know, you want to achieve that, those type of goals and have that type of impact on others, you know, hopefully.
So it was always the goal. When you got into it, was it just the, you know, that's what people were doing? You knew you had this talent. Like, how'd you get started?
Well, getting into it, I was just really just trying to just be the dopest MC in my neighborhood. Like, I would have been content if I would have been considered the best lyricist in Bed-Stuy. That would have been good enough for me at that point in time. And then once I met Biz Markie and he started talking about, we're going to get a record deal and all this stuff, and we're going to be doing shows and all of that started happening, I started thinking bigger. And I started realizing, like, you know, wow, you know, this can really be something. And, like, you know, thinking about the way I had admired artists like Marvin Gaye and Barry White, James Brown, I was saying to myself, you know, like, hopefully one day I can get to, you know, that level. You know, I would love to, you know, have that type of impact on people, you know.
But it wasn't at that time, and we're telling stories, so I tell people, my father used to manage WDAS here in Philadelphia. And it was at a time when people like Lady B and some of the others were trying to convince people that hip-hop is something we need to be playing.
Right.
And there was pushback. So when you're sitting there trying to do all those things, you also were fighting against people who thought this was kind of fly by night.
You said I was fighting against?
Against an industry that wasn't quite sure that this was a long-lasting career, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. By all means, you know, you had people that didn't take what we were doing serious, looked down on it, felt like it wasn't real music. We were stealing people music and things of that nature. I think that, you know, that mindset had its bad sides, but also there was a lot of good that came with it as well.
Okay, so what was that? It just made you work harder?
No. Because it's like when you're coming into the industry with something fresh and new, you don't have to deal with that creative control. Because A&Rs and record company presidents and things of that nature, they didn't know what they were doing. They were fresh off of working a Shalamar or Stephanie Mills record.
Right.
They were clueless to what we were doing. So when we're telling them this is a hit, it's like they don't know. So we had so much more creative control then.
Did you also have to do then the extra work? Like, there's all the stories about you're constantly battling, you're playing the shows, you're selling, you know, mixtapes. Was there more that came to it that way also?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, by all means. Because radio didn't want to play hip-hop. So, yeah, we had to do a lot of mixtapes. We had to do our own little hip-hop chitlin' circuit, you know? Where, you know, we're in clubs that may hold, you know, 300-400 people and the money wasn't right. But this is what we did for recognition and to, you know, get the song and, the brand out there further.
So you said initially the goal was to just be the best in Bed-Stuy.
Right.
But even that, I mean, if you look at the people who were in Bed-Stuy and the people that you were interacting with, even that would have been a huge accomplishment because those were names that all went on to be legends, or a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So how do you then, you said you were working with Marley Marl, you're working with Biz Markie. How did everybody kind of come together and push that forward? Was it just, we're all going to do this?
Well, Mr. Magic, he had this clique called the Juice Crew. And when he started using his own artists, as opposed to, because, you know, he was the first DJ on-air personality to play hip hop, you know, mm-hmm. and he, you know, when they, you know, decided, you know, okay, we're going to, instead of just playing other artists, we need our own artists. Roxanne Shanté was the first one. And when she blew up and became successful, then came MC Shan, then came Craig G, then Biz Markie, Kool G Rap, myself, Master Ace, you know, and that's how it came to be.
And there was a lot of, and, you know, for people who weren't in it, like myself, for people like you who were, there was a lot of reputations who were made by who were the best battle rappers. Like, who is standing out at these different the parties or with the DJs that you're talking about. But it sounds like even as you were battling, y'all were all pretty cool, kind of working in the same direction.
Oh, yeah. I've seen MC Shan and KRS-One in the same room on the same shows during the time they were, you know, had diss records against each other. I've seen LL Cool J and Kumo D in photos together, hugging each other, laughing while they were, you know, dissing each other on songs. Me and KRS, we were, you know, still are very close friends. And, you know, I told him after I did it, I just, you know, wrote a song with some diss rhymes at you for Roxanne Shanté. You know, we were cool like that.
And nobody took it personally. I mean, that's not the way it is right now. So y'all all understood it even then that this is the game. This is what we're doing to get to the top.
Well, I mean, that was a part of hip hop. You know, battling is one of those elements in MCing. And it was a part of it, and it was something that we understood. And when it was time, when it was go time, we were willing to do it. We were willing to do it. And no one at that point in time was really scared of a lyrical butt whipping. You know, right. you take one and you move on. That's just what it is. You know, it's a lot different. You know, the mentality is much different today.
I don't think you took too many of them, though.
Never. Right.
So it's easy to not take it personally when you're the one who's giving out all the butt whipping.
Mel, matter of fact, you know what? Tell you a funny story. One night in Mexico, while filming this movie called Gunman, me, Rakim, and Kid Frost, we got on the mic and rhymed at this club. And it was so crazy because all the other cast members that was in the movie, you know, everybody always wanted to see a Kane and Rakim battle.
Right.
So they're excited. Like, Kane and Rakim are actually going to rhyme on the mic. They're going to freestyle on the mic, back and forth. And do you know who was victorious?
Kid Frost.
Absolutely. We were in Mexico on his ground. And then one of his rhymes he ended with, and this is for La Raza. And the crowd went bananas. And yeah, he was the man that night.
Right. So there was one. Like, maybe.
I guess you can count that one as an L.
We got one L on the record. Like, that's solid after doing it for an entire career. And that one was out of the country. So yeah. I don't know if that counts on the record.
Okay, I'll go with that.
Yeah. Those unsanctioned fights that happen outside of the country, like, those don't count on your official record. Like, so you guys could do that. And some of the most well-respected hip-hop artists of all time, when did we lose that? Or did we lose that? Because there was a point where it got really personal. And now it's not just this competitive force. It's personal. It's violent.
Well, yeah, we definitely lost that when gangster rap became the thing, because you have to keep up this persona, you know? Okay. Even if you're not really that tough, you still have to project that image and sell it for your fan base. So someone going at you on a song, you know, your fan base are expecting you to retaliate not on record, but physically. They want you to make it into a contact sport now. So therefore, you know, it kind of changes the dynamics of, you know, what hip hop really is. And I think that a lot of artists, you know, fell for that, you know, fell for the bait and, you know, fell victim to that.
We had, when you guys were doing New Jack City, the musical, Tretch was actually here and he came on and was talking to us and said the same thing, said that that was one of the challenges because he saw some of the things that were going on stage and in the public, but was friends with some of those guys behind the scenes. And it became hard kind of balancing that. Now, I know that these guys are okay, but the public is talking about they got to fight, shoot, do whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like because you've taken on this gangster persona, that's what people expect to see. The stuff, the gangster image you portrayed on song, now they want to see you actually live it because someone else is dissing you on a song. Where it's like, you know, in hip hop, that's a normal thing. Someone diss you, you diss them back. Y'all battle, you know, and everybody moves on to record another day. But and in that whole essence of the gangster era, it was the type of thing where now the dynamics have changed and they want to see it become a contact sport and see you like really retaliate physically and hurt this person. And the worst thing that can happen is if you're not really a gangster. Right. Because, you know, if you're really a gangster, you might say, I'm going to get this here money. I ain't got no time for that little jive right there, you know? But if you're not really built that way, you're going to feel the need to portray, you know, that role. You're going to feel the need to call and respond in a violent way to live up to your image.
Do you think that people, young people, today's hip hop, even then, like a few years, I guess now it's many years back, people who recognize yourself and others as the legends, people who they still respect, do they listen to you when you tell them, guys, come on, like this is not what this is supposed to be about?
Yeah, when I mean, face to face, I mean, you know, I don't know if they really take heed to something I may post on IG positively. But I mean, if I'm face to face and I can spit that game right in their face and, you know, make them understand, you know, yeah, they listen.
So now, and moving in a little bit, you know, so you guys are touring still, you know, which is crazy. I mean, when you think about it, is the fact that you're still touring on the kind of shows, like I came up back in the day when they had those Budweiser Superfest, like stadium shows where you would have everybody together performing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you all are getting ready to do. Something similar. You're getting ready to do January 14th here in Atlantic City at Boardwalk Hall. What's that like? Getting everybody. I mean, it's a lot of people coming back together to just party all day.
I think that's beautiful. And, you know, I love those type of moments, you know, where you get to see your peers that you grew up with and hear what's going on in their life right now and things of that nature. And then watch them perform the songs that, you know, you grew up listening to and enjoying back in the 80s or 90s. But, you know, in all honesty, I don't think that that's so, you know, weird and strange because, you know, Tony, you know, those guys came out after me and they're on tour right now. You know, they're on tour right now.
He actually was just here. Rafael Sadiq was just on with us also and talking about that. And they came back together after years apart.
Yeah. The Rolling Stones are about to go out. And these are cats from the 60s, you know. So, you know, I think that it's actually normal. I mean, if the catalog had that type of stay power and you have a fan base that still want to see you and you're physically up to it, why not? Why not? Why not get out there and, you know, get the people what they want and, you know, and get that bag at the same time?
It is an interesting point, though, because I think you make a good point. Like, nobody says anything about old rock groups or old anything group.
Well, nobody uses that term either. You know, they call the Rolling Stones rock legends. Right. They call Patti LaBelle an R&B legend. They call Madonna a pop legend. They call Big Daddy Kane, LL Cool J, Kool Moe Dee, old school rappers. They put expiration dates on us on just, that's only in hip hop. That's not in the blues, pop music, R&B. You know, the worst in R&B you might get is auntie. I guess someone called Patty or Gladys auntie. That's the worst it get. In hip hop, you get old school rapper or old heads. So they put expiration dates on us, you know. I mean, like I said, like earlier, you know, it don't matter because we out there still touring and we still getting that bag. So, you know, that's their label. But, you know, I just feel like that type of disconnect is the type of thing that, you know, when it passes on to the next generation and that's the mindset, it can create an expiration date for a lot of hip hop legends.
If it means anything, I have hip hop legend written on my notepad. We were sitting there talking about you. So we've got that written down here. But I think Jazzy Jeff was talking about, and I wonder if you think that this is true, because we're now at you know, just got finished or continuing on with the 50 years of hip hop celebration. Like, it's in a lot of ways, it's the first time people have really defined what hip hop legends are. You know, because you've had those types of things in other music for years, but it's, you know, I guess comparatively relatively new that we have people like yourself who are legends. So people don't know exactly how to define it.
I think that it's the type of thing where media is finally acknowledging that.
Okay.
I think that there's been a fan base out there for years that's been coming up. Yo, what's up, legend? I grew up off of you. Man, who are MC Lightman? She's a legend. Yo, LL is the GOAT. You know, there's been fan base out there that's been referring to us that way for a long time. But now, you know, BET, the Grammys, a lot of other social media platforms, now they're acknowledging hip hop that way.
So media's finally catching up also. And going out there and giving appropriate respect.
Yeah.
So is that another reason why shows like the one that you guys are about to do, and I'm going through this list before you came on, and me and my producer here in studio are just trying our best to recite lyrics from all the different people on there. We got the Tough Crew on there, and Monty G from the Tough Crew actually is a Philly guy who we all know. Like, going through that whole list, I think that will be fun for people to see those, well, some legends, some long-term performers. I don't want to throw around the term too loosely.
Look, I got some Philly faves. If you got that list in front of you, tell me, is Yvette Money and Ice Cream Tea going to be there?
No, they're not on the list, man. Exactly. You need to talk to Jazzy Jeff.
I got my own personal Philly faves, you know?
You need to talk to Jazzy Jeff. He's putting together the list, right?
No, that's my first call as soon as we finish this Zoom.
Tell him you got to pull it together. We got the Ultra Magnetic MCs, the Tough Crew, Tag Team, Sweet T, Stetsasonic, Schoolie D's Philly.
Oh, no, I said my Philly favorites. But Philly, the Schoolie D, yeah, you got to have him. We got to have PSK in our life.
Man, I feel like you could make a call and get some of these people on the show if that's something.
No, because that's just me being selfish. I want to see Vet Money. I want to see Ice Cream Tea. That's just me being selfish.
All right. Well, so after we finish this interview, me and you and Jazzy, we'll get together and start planning. I mean, you're talking about people still getting the bag. I'm a co-promote. You coming in and headline this Philly Legends tour we're going to do.
Sound like a plan.
Did you, going back a little bit, did you, when you were going through all this, still a legend, but Four Finger Rings became a thing. Velour became a thing. The High Top Fade became a thing. Were you guys, did you recognize the influencers you were before people started calling you and calling people in general influencers?
Well, I did. I recognized it because I had seen it already. You know, I remember, you know, everybody rocking the Bermuda Kangos because LL had them on. I remember people rocking their shell toes with no laces because Run DMC did, you know? So it's like, you know, I had already seen it before I came out with records. The 8-Ball jackets because of Salt and Pepper, you know? So I had already seen it. So it was like when I started looking around and I saw people with the flat tops and the parts in their eyebrows, you know, I knew. I was like, oh, okay. I'm starting to do it like Salt and Pepper and them, like Run DMC and them. This is dope. This is dope, you know? Because I'd already seen it, you know what I mean?
Now you're taking me back. Parts in the eyebrows, all that kind of stuff. My producer here in studio used to work at the merry-go-round at the mall, which was the place where you would go and get all of those kind of clothes and whatnot. But you guys were setting, and really in some ways still are, setting those trends. Did people give you that appropriate respect? I mean, we know my Adidas. We know a bunch of those things. We know the throwback jerseys, but didn't always associate them with the people who started it.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times we haven't done that in hip hop, but I mean, you know, you got to give, you know, props and respect to Wiz Dewitt. I mean, you know, majority of people that was rocking, you know, those Bermuda Kangols was rocking it because of LL, I'm Bad Video. You know, the 8-Ball jackets, Salt and Pepper turned the world on to them. You know, everybody was wearing shell to Adidas already, but it wasn't until they saw Run DMC that they snatched the laces out, you know? The flat top and the parts and the eyebrows, that's me. The leather medallions, that's Public Enemy. Clock, that's Flavor Flav, you know? Yeah. Yeah. What was the cut? Was it Steady B or was it EST? I forgot what that cut was.
But EST was Philly too, right?
Yeah.
So then we're gonna give it to EST.
And who was? Matter of fact, was it Steady B? What they used to wear the plastic man glasses?
Right.
Those was the thing for a while too. Remember those shades? Those was the thing for a while. But now they back. Those big shades is back.
Man, I used to wear those big goggles. My boy's girlfriend, and now she's his wife. She still tells stories about my glasses were so big she thought I could see the future, you know, through those things.
Nah, that was a Philly thing, you know. So y'all had a lot of trendsetters there too, man. Yeah, man.
So are you, as a couple more questions? I appreciate you spending this much time with us, man. But it sounds like you are as excited about these shows as the rest of us are. There's still that ultimate level of respect for all these people you get to come together with.
Absolutely, man. I love, like I said, sharing the stage with my peers that I began with, and then some of them that became before me, you know, and seeing them, you know, still doing their thing and their energy, you know. I mean, I love it. We did the Rock the Bells cruise last month. I saw Sha-Rock get on stage and curse somebody out for referring to someone else as being the first female MC. And I was there for every moment of it. I'm sitting there like a big kid, like oh, I need some popcorn right now, man. You know, like I love these type of moments, you know? I mean, so yeah, man, you know, I enjoy it, man.
You're doing Rock the Bells cruises and different shows. So you're just continuing, as you said, to get the bag. Like, this never stopped.
Nah. It's we've been doing this for a long time, and it's continuing, you know, and it's, I believe it's going to continue going on. It's just, you know, a lot of it doesn't get that mainstream media.
Okay.
You know, it would be nice if it did, but you know, and back in my, you know, teen years in my 20s, I got a lot of mainstream media, you know, so I'm not mad, you know. You know, right now, as long as the bag is there, I ain't complaining, man.
All right, the last two, and I'm going to let you go. We want to remind everybody, make sure Sunday, January 14th, we got some of the Philly legends. We've got legends across the board. It's going to be, I don't even know how you guys are going to do this. This is going to be like an 8-hour show. About 40 people on this.
I think that probably, like, you know, the song selections will be cut down to, you know, make it fit, you know.
I don't know. I think if you got legends, y'all just do the 8-hour show. Let people just hang out all day.
I think it'll have a much better impact with all these artists coming on stage and only doing their hits. No full shows, you know, no B-sides deep in the catalog. just do your hits and just keep hitting them with hit after hit after hit after hit for a good, you know, 2.5 to 3 hours, and you will have one of the most phenomenal shows you ever seen.
Man,
it'll sound like a night on Mr. Magic's Rap Attack or something like that, you know?
I know you guys are business people, and I know Jazzy Jeff is a business person, but can you imagine recording all of that, and then y'all can sell the movie like the Kings of Comedy did back in the day from this concert? I'm going to let you go ahead and steal that idea. Just complimentary. You go ahead. So you can come back when we do the Philly tour.
Well, I mean, Charlie Mack has something to do with this as well.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that's already in the works. No one else.
Because Charlie doesn't leave any money on the table.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty sure that's already in the works.
If there is money to be made and a promotion to happen, Charlie Mack's like, all right, I got you.
In a real kind of way.
So Sunday, January 14th, tickets are available. Check them out. You're not going to want to miss the All-Stars of Hip Hop Mixtape Live 24. It's the 14th year anniversary of doing this. I started rattling off the names, but the headliners, Jazzy Jeff, KRS-One, MC Lyte, Flavor Flav, and of course, the legend, Big Daddy Kane. We end every episode of The Pulse with the concept of use your voice for good. We want people to end with positivity, with some sort of positive message. So when you hear the phrase, use your voice for good, what does that mean to you?
I think that, you know, if you have a powerful position and a powerful voice where people are listening to you, then use it to tell people something positive as opposed to something negative. You know, whatever message that you're trying to deliver, make sure it would be the same message that you would try to deliver to your child.
I appreciate you. That is the place to leave it. And I didn't even start reciting any of your lyrics and embarrass myself. So this is a good enough place to drop the mic. Legend, I appreciate your time. I really do. And I look forward to seeing you all Sunday, January 14th.
Thank you, brother. Much respect.
Absolutely. You have a good one. I'm going to go dust off some of my stuff, cut the eyebrows, bring out the big glasses. I'm feeling nostalgic.
All right, man. Well, I look forward to seeing you, man.
Take care. I appreciate you. Thank you. Guys, thanks so much for listening to The Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today with the legend, Big Daddy Kane. I've been walking around for the last week reciting Big Daddy Kane lyrics. I am not going to do that to you, but I enjoyed myself talking to him and hearing some of the stories. This may be the only documented case of Big Daddy Kane taking an L in a hip hop battle that he shared with us. Right. Yeah, it was an unsanctioned, out of the country L that does not go on your record. We all know that. There was no sanctioning body that put that battle on, but took an L, shared it with us, and humbly took an L. Great conversation. I hope you enjoyed it. Do me a favor, hit the subscribe, like, whatever button it is at the top of your screen, phone, tablet, laptop, that allows you to get a notification every time a new episode of The Pulse comes out. We want you to stay on board with us. There are episodes up on YouTube, all of them. What are we up to? 70, 80 some odd episodes. Amazing guests. Just take a couple minutes, scroll through. I'm sure you will enjoy some of them. And now all of you who are streaming, you cord cutters who no longer have TV, connected TV, we are there on Roku, on Apple TV, on Fire TV, soon on Samsung. So if you've got a connected TV, you can also get us. So make sure you get the Fox Local app. We would love you to be able to follow along. I thank you. I appreciate you. You can hit me up on social media at Bill A. Fox 29. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.